What's going on, everybody? Brand new week, brand new episode of Past and Present being tossed your way. Thank you so much for joining me once again. I am your host, Shane Tidrick. How's everybody's holiday season treating them so far? I know a lot of y'all excited for Christmas to just hurry up and get here and be done with, right? Tired of the shopping, tired of pulling out the hair and all that stuff. Well, I'm tired of this crazy weather that we've been having down here in San Francisco lately. Sunny one day, downpour the next, had that big storm come in, which was more like a typical day back in my hometown of Portland. And speaking of Portland, I get to go home here pretty soon. I got about a week until I get to go back and see the family for the holidays. I'm looking forward to that. A lot of news coming out of the sports world recently. A lot of history being made. Marcus Mariota brings home the Heisman Trophy to Oregon for the first time in school history. What does that mean for the school, and what does that mean for his career moving forward? Plus, Russell Wilson sets an NFL record for the most wins by a quarterback in his first three seasons, so how good is he really? And Kobe Bryant has moved past Michael Jordan for the number three all-time scoring leader in the NBA. So, what does that say about MJ's legacy and Kobe's legacy? We'll talk about that and more coming up right here on Past and Present.
Hi, this is Daniel Gutierrez, and I play on the baseball team for the Academy of Art University. You are listening to RU's new home, UKR2. Make sure you guys come out and support us at Laney College.
All right, you are back listening to Past and Present. We're going to dive right into things right away here because we got a lot to talk about, and we're going to kick things off talking about Marcus Mariota making history in more ways than just one. Yes, he was the first player from the University of Oregon to win the prestigious Heisman Trophy. Congratulations, Marcus Mariota. But did you also know that he is the first Hawaiian-born player to ever do such a thing? And he's also the first player to bring the Heisman Trophy back to a Northwest school since 1962, back when Terry Baker did it for Oregon State. Pretty big milestones that he's accomplished here. Really big deal. The kid plays what I was calling last year above himself. Now I think that's just who he is. He is much more talented than what I gave him credit for last season. And I'm excited to see what happens to him going forward. As far as the school's concerned, this is going to make recruiting in the future a lot easier. People are going to look at Oregon as a legitimate contender. Right up there with the always favored, it seems. It seems to be always favored SEC schools and other schools out east or down in the south. Oregon and the Pac-12 have had a hard time recruiting top-level talent in the past, but Oregon has really been elevated to a whole nother level as of late. It seems like when Chip Kelly arrived, Oregon started becoming more and more and more of a favorable destination for certain kinds of players, mostly the speed backs and guys that may not thrive once they get to the NFL, but during college they can really make a name for themselves. So I think that now that Oregon does have a Heisman Trophy in their trophy case, this should make recruiting for the school just that much easier, be able to get guys that are not only fast speedsters, but also great defenders, and also big bulky linemen, which are the two things that I feel like Oregon has lacked as of late. Well, really, over the last few years, they really haven't had a really solid defense, and it starts with the linebackers, in my opinion. Their defensive line is always pretty solid, but from the linebackers back, their play has been, I don't want to say soft, but there are a lot of holes that could be filled. And like I said, having somebody who just won the Heisman, whether it be a quarterback or somebody who plays defense, is going to help recruit people out of high school on every level. It just looks that much better for the school. It also doesn't help that it's pretty much ran by Nike, so that helps. So what does this mean for Marcus moving forward in his own career? Well, it's always good to have the Heisman. It's never a bad thing to be a Heisman Trophy winner. But the thing is, the reason why I'm still cautious and nervous and not buying in 110% to his, you know, automated success from here on out is that we've seen a lot of Heisman Trophy winners flop once they get to the NFL, where maybe the league is just different from what they're used to. I'm not saying that Mariota is built to be a bust. That's not at all what I'm saying. In fact, from the looks of things, just physically, he looks like he could be the next, you know, the next great quarterback. 6'4", 219 pounds. He is built like, he's built pretty solid. I think he could put on a little bit more weight, just a little bit more weight considering how big he is. But as of right now, especially considering the fact that he is so mobile and so fast and so elusive, I think that he can go ahead and just keep the weight that he's currently at and until he gets drafted by somebody, and then they're going to want to obviously tweak his physical appearance just a little bit. But I'm nervous for him for this reason. Well, a couple of reasons here. One, I fear that his draft stock might be affected by quarterbacks already in the league. And by that I mean, a couple of years ago, when Cam Newton was drafted into the NFL, the new age scrambling mobile quarterback was all the rage. Everybody wanted a guy that could run just as well as he could throw. And Cam was kind of that prototype. He was the first, not the first scrambling quarterback. Obviously, there have been a ton before him. But he kind of laid down the foundation of what people wanted out of their scrambling quarterbacks as far as his physical stature goes. Then came along RG3, Mike Vick kind of raised people's expectations still, even though he was getting into his later years of his career. People still expected a lot of running around, scrambling, freeing himself out of the pocket out of Vick. Colin Kaepernick was another one. But all these guys being mentioned, the only one that's been successful and continued to be successful at scrambling and throwing the football has been Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks. We'll talk more about what makes him so special a little bit later, but just to touch on it a little bit, he was drafted late because of his size. And by size, I mean height. He's actually a pretty stocky dude, and he's taken some licks, as we've seen, and gotten right back up and gotten back into the huddle and ready to play another down. But I'm fearing that the decline of the other scrambling quarterbacks in the league right now might hurt Mariota's draft stock just a bit, because I don't think that GMs and coaches are quite so excited about drafting a quarterback that does like to run. Now, Mariota ran the read option better than any other quarterback in college. He's ran that read option better than any other quarterback I've seen in a while, to be quite honest with you. At least at the college level. You never knew if he was going to take off. And when he did, he had such speed and elusiveness. It was hard to ever... I mean, he really didn't take very many big hits. He would get shoved out of bounds, or he would wisely slide to the turf before taking a big shot. But again, this is the NCAA. Once you get to the NFL, it's a whole nother animal. It's a whole nother beast. You just ask Johnny Manziel. You saw what happened to him in his first starting debut. He got torn up. He got eaten alive. And he was made famous in college for the same thing that Mariota's doing, which is basically playing backyard football every now and again. Mariota didn't really run the read option. He just kind of created things with his feet, created opportunities. So they weren't designed running plays. But still, everybody knew when he got under center, what he liked to do. So what do? They set a couple of spies on him and dare them to beat him with his arm. And he can't do it from the pocket. Like Merrill Hodge pointed this out way before he ever got drafted, that he has no pocket presence. He has no sense of what he's doing in the pocket. So we saw Manziel try to get outside of the pocket, and that's when those big linebackers and defensive ends would just eat him up. And he went down a lot. I don't want to see that happen to Mariota. The reason why I don't think that it will, at least not to that extent, is because Mariota is quite a bit bigger than Manziel, quite a bit bigger than Wilson. He's built really well, and I have seen him have a pretty good pocket presence. Another thing that I feel like could hurt him is that his deep ball, in my opinion, is not all that accurate. He's got a laser for a medium passer, and he's good at short passes as well. But if he needs to fling that ball downfield, there have been times that he's just throwing up prayers, really, and it's anybody's guess who's going to come down with it. Fortunately for Oregon, they always get really good receivers, and they always have really good tailbacks that have soft hands and a nose for the ball. I don't know how well that's going to work in the next level against these great safeties and corners that the NFL has been managing to find lately. It seems like the secondary is becoming that thing that everybody wants to bulk up and build off of. So those are the two things that got me nervous for Mariota's draft stock moving forward. I'm sure that he will be successful. He seems like a good kid with a good head on his shoulders. He's smart, and he knows what it takes to be successful, and I think he surrounded him with really good people. And it starts with his family. You know, I've got a few friends that are Hawaiian natives themselves, and they take, you know, the love of their family to a whole nother level. The whole respecting your elders thing, that really means a lot to them. So I feel like he is the perfect candidate for someone who's going to make it into the league and be successful. I see him being successful, not just with his physical abilities, but also with his mental capabilities as well. He's a very, very smart kid. I wish him nothing but the best. I just, like I said, I just kind of fear that these other mobile passers that have really regressed. I mean, you look at Colin Kaepernick's year. My God, who would want to roll the dice on another guy who does similar things? Now, Mariota is head and shoulders above Kaepernick as far as talent level, even right now. And Kaepernick is not an accurate passer at all. If you keep that guy in the pocket, he's going to throw you a duck at least twice each game. I guarantee it. Mariota's got a lot of room to grow. However, I still think he's above Kaepernick's level already. Cam Newton's been getting beat up a lot in Carolina. A lot of that is attributed to the lack of an offensive line. It's just getting ugly for him, man. It really is. And I just, it's got me nervous. It's just got me nervous. The guys that used to be the prized possession of the NFL, now the mobile quarterback is kind of being looked at as it was a fad. Now we want to go back to the pocket passer. So that's it. I mean, that's my piece on why I kind of fear for Mariota and his draft stock. I highly, highly doubt he's going to go number one overall. I mean, just looking at the teams that are finishing towards the bottom of the pack, I guess the Titans, if he were to be selected number one overall, it would be if the Titans won that selection. Then last I read, I believe they are in place to have that pick. But, I mean, if we were to go to the Raiders, forget about it. They already got their quarterback. I like Carr a lot. I think he's going to grow into something special. So, Mariota, best of luck to you, buddy. I hope you do well in the league. I'm sure you will. A lot of people across this country are going to be watching you from here on out, making predictions, guessing who's going to pick you up, where you're going to thrive, if you're going to fail, this and that. But from one Oregon native to a Hawaiian native, let me just go ahead and say, buddy, good luck. I wish you nothing but the best. I want to see you thrive again. And hopefully you don't get selected by one of my rival teams, because I don't want to see you going up against the Legion of Boom too often, all right? Good luck, Marcus Mariota. All right, you've been listening to Past and Present. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be talking Kobe Bryant, Russell Wilson, and, oh yeah, I got a little interview with my man Darwin Payton to talk about Floyd Mayweather fighting Manny Pacquiao. Is it really going to happen? Is this the real deal this time? I don't know, man. You have to find out when we come back.
Sports, talk, and rock. This is the Academy of Art University's all-new UKR2.
All right, welcome back to Past and Present. We're about to dive into the topic of talking about Kobe Bryant surpassing Michael Jordan for the number three spot in the all-time point leaders in NBA history. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar leads the way with 38,387 points. Karl Malone is in second with a 36,928 total. And then third spot is Kobe Bryant, the Black Mamba, 32,331, who passed up Michael Jordan's 32,292 in his recent game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was a really historic night, historic event. A lot of people were watching it just for that purpose because, let's face it, who really wants to watch the Lakers and the Timberwolves right now, considering how sorry both of these teams are? The only reason why people are even watching Laker games anymore is because of Kobe Bryant. So for that reason and that reason alone, I think that he deserves all the praise and all the accolades that you could possibly give this man. I mean, he's done a lot. In his 19th season in the NBA, he continues to put up numbers. He continues to play just as hard as he did when he was a rookie, and he is still going. So I know that old saying, Father Time is undefeated. It really looks like, with the exception of that major injury that he suffered last season, it really appears as though Kobe Bryant is not afraid of Father Time, and now Father Time is having a hard time getting his hands on the Mamba. However, I will say this. I want to make sure that everybody out there pumps the brakes and slows down when they start making comparisons between Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. Okay. Yes, Kobe passed him up on the all-time scoring leader list. It's a big deal. It's a really big deal. However, Michael Jordan beats him in pretty much everything else. He might not have put in as many buckets, but he's got six rings. He's unblemished. Unblemished in the NBA Finals. A perfect 6-for-6, winning the MVP every time. He was on the original Dream Team and blah, blah, blah. I mean, do I really need to go over this man's resume to tell you why Michael Jordan is the GOAT, the greatest of all time? And Kobe Bryant, what I love about Kobe is that watching him play, it's like watching Michael Jordan play again. They have so many similar moves. You can tell that Kobe spent hours upon days upon weeks, months, whatever, trying to create a game that was incredibly similar, if not identical, to that of Michael Jordan. You've seen those videos on YouTube of Jordan taking a shot and then it kind of switches to Kobe doing the exact same shot from the exact same spot on the court. You can't make that stuff up. You know, you can't Photoshop that kind of thing. It's real. That thing is real. Kobe Bryant saw in Michael what he wanted to become. And I'm not going to say that he has done that, but he has come closer to anybody than anybody else has, and probably anybody else ever will. Now, one thing that I found pretty interesting is that after the game against the Timberwolves, Kobe was quoted in saying he saw a little bit of himself in rookie Andrew Wiggins. It's a pretty big compliment coming from, you know, one of the elite of the elites. So Andrew Wiggins, I guess, has a lot to live up to now. Probably going to be a lot, that comment probably brought a lot more eyes onto Kobe. Onto Andrew Wiggins. However, I don't think that he should feel any extra pressure from that. I think he needs to just go ahead and keep doing what he's been doing. And maybe one day he can help make the Minnesota Timberwolves relevant again. And speaking of the Timberwolves, I've got to throw this out there. Those broadcasters who were calling the game when Kobe hit those two shots at the free throw line to surpass Michael Jordan, did a terrible, terrible job of giving Kobe credit where his credit was due. They tried to curve everything back to being about Minnesota. They kept on saying, oh, it's ironic how Kobe is doing this for the Lakers, and the Lakers started off right here in Minnesota. Nobody cares about that. All right, guys, look. Just let the moment happen, okay? Stop complaining about how it's taking away from the basketball game. Stop complaining about how the Lakers used to be in Minnesota. You got the Timberwolves now. Nobody even remembers the Minnesota Lakers anymore. You have to dig back into some old history books. Stop trying to go ahead and shine the light back on the Wolves when it's clearly Kobe's moment. What I did like about the Wolves coaching staff is that they called a timeout just so that Kobe Bryant could kind of soak in the moment. They presented him with a game ball. Both teams, the Lakers and the Wolves, that is, walked over, shook his hand, congratulated him, smiles all around. It was like a very miniature retirement ceremony for him right there on the spot on the court, and I really appreciated that. But those announcers just, oh man, talk about dropping the ball. If anybody else could have done that game, I would have preferred it. I really wish that game was being broadcast on TNT or something like that, or somewhere where maybe Reggie Miller or pretty much anybody else, any professional, would have been able to sit there and give Kobe Bryant his props instead of trying to take away from it and saying, well, let's talk Timberwolves. Let's go ahead and weave in Timberwolves news into what's going on right now. Nobody wanted to hear that. So I'm a little disappointed that took place. But, I mean, the moment was still huge. If you haven't seen it, I highly suggest you go online and go ahead and check it out. It's definitely worth a watch. And Kobe Bryant, the nation's hats are tipped to you. This moment is yours. Congratulations. You know, you're going down in history. Obviously, a first ballot Hall of Famer. Congratulations, Kobe Bryant. All right. We're going to go ahead and take another quick break. When we come back, we're talking Russell Wilson, and we're talking Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather right here on Pass and Present.
Hey, are you sick and tired of the same old stuff being played on the radio? It's like these DJs don't know what the kids want to listen to. Well, thank goodness that UrbanNightsRadio.com is run by professional-grade student DJs. We play all your favorite hits, as well as the stuff you haven't heard, and we've got some great shows for no matter what you're into. UrbanNightsRadio.com is now proudly partnered with iHeartRadio, so download the app, and remember, it's UrbanNightsRadio.com, the sound of artists.
Which the two of us kind of share this optimistic way of looking at things, you know, like something good's always going to happen. He's there. And the depth of his belief is just so strong in himself and in the ability to handle and factor in the outcome that it's like there's never a doubt that we're going to get back. If there's enough time, it's going to happen. So he's really cool and exciting, and it's fun to be going at this with him.
That was just the sound of Seattle Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll talking with John Gruden about what his quarterback Russell Wilson means to him and his desire to make comebacks in clutch moments like we saw this last weekend when they played the San Francisco 49ers. So clearly Pete Carroll believes in his young quarterback quite a bit. And that last game that they did win against SF was actually a record-setting game for Russell Wilson. He became the quarterback with the most wins in NFL history in the first 3 years of his career with 34, and he also has a Super Bowl ring. So with that in mind, the question is raised, just how good is Russell Wilson really? Well, I mean, coming from this humble Seattle Seahawks fan right here, I think that you have to put him in the top 10 NFL quarterback category. I wouldn't say top five quite yet. I think Peyton Manning, you know, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady, they make up the four. And then that fifth spot, that's a tough one to give away right now. I'm trying to think of who is worthy for the number five spot as a quarterback right now in the NFL. I don't know who exactly off the top of my head it would be, but I know it's not Russell Wilson. And the reason why I say that is because even though he has accomplished so much in his short time in the league, he still has a long way to go. There are other guys that are still playing at a very high level that are doing things, that have been doing things in the past that they're trying to look to repeat. Ben Roethlisberger being one of them. I guess you might be able to give him the number five spot right now, even though he's never talked about anymore, and he has his ups and downs as a quarterback. He is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He is the reason why wide receivers still sign to go to Pittsburgh, despite the fact that they have been more or less irrelevant over the last few years as far as the playoffs and things like that go. But what I like about Russell Wilson is his humility and how he's able to be humble. He has done so much in such a short amount of time. It's really easy for a young athlete at any stage, in any sport, to really get a big head at this point after having accomplished what Wilson has accomplished. He refuses to let that happen. He's a very, very, very humble person. And I think that that is what is helping him elevate his game to a whole other level, is that he always wants to get better. Instead of saying, hey, I'm at the top of my game, people need to get on my level, he's saying, no, how can I get better? How can I take this team to the next step? Even after that Super Bowl, he said that he gave himself about a month to really soak all that in, to really appreciate what it is that he did, to really celebrate it, and then he got right back to work. And that's a strong work ethic. For sure, to make it to the top of the mountain and say, you know, there's another one to climb. Let's go ahead and make that peak. So that's where his mind's at. As far as his ability goes, I know a lot of people, when people say Seattle Seahawks, the first thing that comes to their mind is defense. After that, they think run game. The very last thing that you would think that the Seattle Seahawks team is good at would be their passing game. So I find that kind of ironic, considering that it is Russell Wilson that led them into the Super Bowl. Now, a lot of people want to say it's Marshawn Lynch, but let's keep in mind, Marshawn's been with the team for years now. And while he has been their workhorse, and I'm not taking anything away from what Beast Mode has done, don't you get me wrong, he's my favorite running back of all time. I've loved this guy since he was at Cal, okay? But what I'm trying to say here is this. Every team needs just that X factor, that one little something to get them over the hump. I don't think that they would have been able to make the Super Bowl last year, even with their elite defense and with their elite running game, if their quarterback was subpar. No. Russell Wilson, it's tough to call him an elite quarterback at this level, at this point. I really don't want to go there. I will say that he is an elite leader, and he is an elite playmaker. Because whenever something breaks down, when that Seattle Seahawks team needs someone to come through and in the clutch and just kind of take over, and say, you know what, nothing else is working. Let me go ahead and try this. You guys hop on my back. I will get us there. It is Wilson that 9 times out of 10 takes the steering wheel and says, I got you. Don't worry about it. Let's make it to the promised land. His ability to roll out of the pocket, his ability to see things happening downfield as he is avoiding the rush, as he is evading tacklers, is something that I haven't seen in my lifetime. And I can truthfully say that. I know that before I was around, Fran Tarkenton was the guy that was very, very much similar to what we're seeing today out of Wilson. In fact, every time Wilson does make one of those scrambling plays, you will hear somebody say that's very Tarkenton-esque, which is great. I mean, I've looked at some of the old Fran Tarkenton videos. I've listened to my dad talk about him. And it is kind of true. I mean, you watch his videos and what this guy did, and it's very much what Russell Wilson did. Scramble around in the pocket, not really looking to run for yards, but more looking to just keep on creating space, keep on creating time for himself to a point where eventually somebody's going to get open so he can gun the ball to him. One of the things that I think puts Russell Wilson in that elite leader category is if you look at who his receivers are, and I don't want to take anything away from Doug Baldwin or Jermaine Kearse, but or Paul Richardson or them boys, but let's just be honest here. Last season, before the season really turned into what eventually led to a Super Bowl run, nobody ever talked about who Golden Tate was. Nobody. Sidney Rice was gone. Nobody knew who this Golden Tate character was. And Percy Harvin, who had just been acquired via free agency, who was supposed to be Mr. Playmaker, was hurt for the majority of the season. Russell Wilson worked with what he had, and he did his very best to elevate his game to a level where maybe there were some talent gaps at the receiver position. And again, not taking anything away from these guys, but you know that old saying, great players make average players around them better? Wilson does exactly that. You look at guys like Doug Baldwin, I don't think that on another team he would be really all that well known. Now, Doug Baldwin is a really good receiver, but what he's really, really good at is blocking downfield. And that's something that Pete Carroll draws up for their offensive scheme, is that the receivers can't just be fast and can't just have soft hands to bring in pass receptions. They're not a passing team. That's not their forte. Their forte is running, whether it be with Marshawn, Turbin, Michael, or Wilson on a drawn-up quarterback keeper. Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse, these guys do not get enough credit for how much space they create for Wilson to run. If you look at the game tape from that San Francisco 49ers game, Wilson had about a 15-yard run down the sidelines that would have been stopped well short of that if Doug Baldwin didn't know how to block. He carried his block all the way till the end of that play, and it was a beautiful one. So I love the receivers that Seattle has. I love what Pete Carroll's doing. I know a lot of people are saying, let's go out and get that big free agent wide receiver and turn us into a well-balanced offense. And that's not the Seattle identity. And I think Russell Wilson recognizes that. He understands that, and he falls in line with that. And he's not trying to be a prima donna talking about, I need to throw the ball more. He's doing whatever it takes to get the team back to the Super Bowl. He's doing whatever it takes to get this team their W's. So, yeah, I would put Russ at the elite leader level. There are a lot of guys in the league, they just don't have it. They don't have the ability to kind of look themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, I'm the guy, but I'm not really the guy. I'm just a piece of the puzzle. So for that, I think Wilson's a little bit underrated. I think he plays bigger than what even he expects out of himself on a weekly basis. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see this kid's hand decorated by more Super Bowl rings throughout his career. All right. You've been listening to Past and Present. When we come back, I got Darwin Payton with me. I'm going to go over a little interview with him talking about what's coming up in the wonderful world of boxing. Is Manny Pacquiao really going to square off against Floyd Mayweather, or is this just more talk? We'll get into that next, right here on Past and Present.
So you're sitting there, and everything is boring. Here's a fix. Why don't you pop on your phone, download the iHeartRadio app, and favorite UrbanNightsRadio.com will keep you up to date on everything happening in the school. We got awesome music and awesome shows for you to listen to. So why don't you check us out, UrbanNightsRadio.com on iHeartRadio. It's the sounds of the artist tailored specifically for you.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Past and Present. I'm your man, Shane Titterick, and sitting with me now in the booth is my boy, Darwin Payton. You might know him better as the 90s baby himself. Got his own show right here on UKR. Darwin, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I know that you've kind of made a name for yourself with the whole 90s music thing, but I know you as AAU's boxing aficionado, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Word on the streets is Floyd Mayweather wants the fight with Manny Pacquiao. I'm trying to get a little bit more of an inside scoop on this. Tell me what you think is going to happen, man.
I honestly believe that this fight, it has to happen. I mean, it's not about anybody dodging anybody. Honestly, I don't think they're either one of them are afraid of each other. They're the two top, you know, fighters in the world. Nobody's better than those two. And I just think with the condition of where boxing is right now, it's what the sport needs. I mean, this fight will make people who don't usually watch boxing watch boxing.
Right.
This fight will probably generate the most money in boxing history off one fight. It's going to be a fight that's going to have a lot of hype.
Sure.
I don't know if it's going to live up to the hype. I don't know if it's going to be as competitive as people think it will be. But I'm curious to see what happens if the fight happens.
So what about this particular fight makes it so highly anticipated? Because people have been talking about these two squaring off for years. This hasn't been like a 1 year, 2 year thing. This has been like easily off the top of my head, at least 5 years that people have been talking about these two going at each other.
I honestly believe that I think it's an anticipated fight because of Floyd. I think Floyd has created a career where a lot of people watch his fights to see, well, maybe the guy he's fighting, maybe he can beat him. You know, Floyd's undefeated, and boxing is a sport where being undefeated is rare, especially being one of the top boxers and stay undefeated.
Yeah, it's true.
So when people see undefeated records in boxing, it looks weird. It looks, oh, wow, that person shouldn't be undefeated. They must not be fighting competition. Even though that's not true for Floyd's case, he's fought, you know, the best he could possibly fight. But I honestly believe that the reason why this fight is so big is because I think for the longest, people thought that the only person who can beat Floyd Mayweather was Manny Pacquiao. So I think that's why it's, you know, overhyped. You know, I wouldn't say overhyped, but it's really hyped because a lot of people believe that Manny Pacquiao is the man to do it, the man to take that O off of Floyd's record.
Sure. And looking at Manny Pacquiao's last fight, a dominating performance that he put on, do you think that he is at what people would consider the peak of his boxing ability right now? Or is he on the decline? Is it like, what kind of Manny are we going to see should he go up against Floyd?
Well, the Manny that I saw, I watched the fight, the Chris Algieri fight. The Manny that I saw, he was in shape. He was in great shape. Honestly, I think Chris Algieri is a tough guy. I think he has a lot of heart. But I think the stage was too big for Chris Algieri. I think he wasn't used to the stage. I think he wasn't used to how big of an event or even the competition that he was going up against. And I really thought that was just practice for Manny. It looked like a sparring session, honestly. I'm not taking credit away from Manny because he did have a spectacular performance. I mean, knocking a guy down 6 or 7 times in one fight is impressive. But I still don't see the same Manny that I saw before he got knocked out by Marquez.
Mm.
I still see a Manny who isn't so concerned about knocking people out anymore, more than making sure he gets through the fight, you know, in good health and wins.
Sure.
I think he's honestly taking a more Floyd mentality to winning a fight, which is, you know, I'm going to try to beat you every round. You know, whoever wins the most rounds wins. So I'm going to beat you 7 out of the 5 rounds or whatever the case may be. I don't think he's really looking for, you know, what we expect him to do is knock out people, you know, left and right. I think he's a smarter fighter now.
Sure. Well, okay, so then taking a look over at Floyd's camp, you had told me about a week ago that he was going through some personal issues that, I don't know, were pretty tough for any human individual to deal with. You want to touch on that a little bit and perhaps enlighten those of the people listening who don't know what happened with him. Just go ahead and give them like kind of an inside view of what did actually take place.
Well, reports say that Floyd witnessed his best friend kill his wife and also kill himself a couple weeks ago, or actually last week. He was talking to his friend. His friend was named Earl Hayes on FaceTime, and Earl Hayes' wife, I guess, allegedly had cheated on him, and Floyd was telling Earl, hey, I think you should leave your wife. you know, man, you can do better. You know, you can, you know, just basically telling him he should end the relationship. Earl, I guess, got mad, said, no, I'm going to kill her. Floyd pleaded with him, like, please don't do it. Please don't. Earl went into the bathroom. His wife was taking a bath, shot her 10 times. The police showed up. Right when they got to the door of the bathroom, Earl shot himself twice. Or two gunshots went off. So, for me, I'm kind of curious how Floyd's going to be able to, you know, because Earl Hayes has been his friend, best friend for at least 20 years.
Right.
And I know when Floyd fought Maidana for, I believe, the first time, he was going through his breakup with his fiance.
Sure.
And a lot of people were saying he didn't perform well because of that. But I honestly think if the Manny Pacquiao fight happens, I think Floyd is one of the best athletes because he has the strongest mind.
Sure, sure.
And I think with any athlete, the greatest, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, what makes them great is not necessarily their talent, but their mental state. Because we've seen players who are athletes who have all the talent in the world, but are hotheads. Hotheads never, you know, really get anywhere. You have to have a strong mind. You have to be focused. And I honestly think that Floyd knows it. Floyd knows how important this fight is with Manny Pacquiao.
Sure.
for his legacy.
Well, you mentioned Michael Jordan. That's a good point. I mean, MJ had to deal with the fact that his own dad was murdered during his playing career and still went out there and performed and, you know, was Michael Jordan. So a lot of people allude to Floyd Mayweather as the Michael Jordan of boxing. This is something that he would have to put up with. The fact is, when Michael Jordan went through all that, a lot of people, I mean, to this day, they talk about that like, man, that's amazing. Like, who else but Mike could have dealt with something like that? Do you feel like Floyd could be that someone else that could deal with something so horrific, you know, while something as big as a fight against Manny Pacquiao is on the horizon?
I think with Floyd, anytime you put a big check with a bunch of zeros on it, he's locked in.
So money talks, huh?
I think he's locked in. I think that's what drives him. And when he sees that check, and trust me, this Manny Pacquiao check will be huge. On top, and just for him to fight, you know, I'm guessing Floyd's gonna at least make $100 million off this fight just for fighting, on top of pay per view buys.
Mm.
So that can be close to $150 million in 36 minutes. So I know if you told me, hey, Darwin, I'll give you $150 million, you know, if you come and fight, and especially if you win it, I'm going to be locked in. I mean, I don't know anybody who wouldn't be locked in.
Right.
I just feel that Floyd will have time to kind of, you know, mourn his friend. I mean, because he said May 2nd. So that's about, you know, a little less than 6 months. You know, Floyd is always ready. Floyd's always in shape. So I think mentally he'll have time to recover.
So this fight, this has been a fight that people have been looking forward to for years. This is all anybody ever talks about. When Floyd fights, they talk about, okay, but can he beat Pacquiao? And vice versa, when Pacquiao fights, they say, okay, that was a nice fight. But what about Floyd? So if these two actually do step in the ring together and they, you know, they fight and that's that, it's over, like Floyd or Manny wins, whatever, what is the future of boxing after that? Because really after that, what's the next big fight that everybody has been wanting to see? Of course there are the diehard boxing fans that are going to stick with the sport regardless of who's in, who's out, whatever, but for those that are just kind of, they just watch it every now and again, they watch the big ones. How are you going to convince those people to come back and watch another fight?
I'm not going to lie. I honestly think this is probably one of the last times we'll see great prize fighters, guys who have truly God-gifted skills in a boxing ring. I mean, this new generation, there's some good upcoming fighters, but guys who can elevate their star power, who can, you know, sell tickets, I don't really see, I see boxing going through a quiet phase after Floyd, you know, and Manny Pacquiao leave. But, you know, every generation has that one boxer who's phenomenal. So with any sport, you know, when the greats leave, there might be a time period where, okay, there might not be a great group of talent, but then that one person always shows up. So I think after Floyd's done, because, I mean, Floyd on his contract has two fights left. I think he'll fight Manny. Depending on how the fight goes, there might be a rematch. And after that, I see Floyd being done. He's talked, he said over and over again, he doesn't care about Rocky Marciano's record of 49-0 surpassing that. But honestly, I think if the money's right and they're like, hey, we'll pay you this for a 50th fight, I think he'll take it. Right. I think he's in good enough shape. I think he's sharp mentally. I think he's still a solid boxer to, you know, I still think nobody can beat him, but that's all up to him.
Sure. And what about the career of Manny Pacquiao? If he, let's just say he lost to Floyd Mayweather. Do you think he'd hang it up? Is that it?
I don't think Manny necessarily has to hang it up. I mean, regardless of the outcome of the fight, I think both of them are Hall of Famers. I think both of them are one of the greatest, the two greatest to ever lace up the gloves, regardless of the outcome. A lot of people say, oh, you know, Floyd Mayweather doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I think that's absurd. I think both Manny Pacquiao and Floyd, if they retired today, would definitely be first ballot Hall of Famers. Sure. They've earned it. If Floyd was like, hey, I'm not fighting anymore, Manny was like, hey, I'm not fighting anymore, they're still the two, one of the two greatest ever. Especially in this era, definitely the two greatest ever.
Yeah, you can't really hold somebody out of the Hall of Fame because of your personal distaste and their lifestyle. I mean, granted, Floyd Mayweather is one of the most controversial athletes today, maybe ever.
Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, you got to judge him based on what he's done in the ring. What he's done in the ring is he's never lost. You know, regardless of who he's fighting or what kind of fighter he's been taking on, not losing a single match is beyond impressive. That's definitely Hall of Fame worthy. So for anybody to say he doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame is absurd to me. I can't get on board with that at all. But I don't know. I mean, as far as the sport of boxing goes, I'm kind of nervous for it myself. I mean, I don't like to compare the two because they're two completely different sports, but I look at the UFC, right? And a couple of years ago, every single fight card was exciting from the start to the finish. Everybody was championship worthy. They were all very talented. I mean, you had no idea how these fights were going to end, whether it be submission, knockout. Mm-hmm. It was very rare that fights went the distance. TKOs happened a lot more often. And Anderson Silva was running the sport. He was the Floyd Mayweather of the UFC. Once he lost, and these other guys were kind of retiring around the same time that he lost, the sport has taken a serious step backwards, and I'm afraid that boxing is headed that direction. Again, real quick, your thoughts on that?
I think there's a few fighters who can, if they put their minds to it, if they dedicate themselves to their craft, can carry the sport after, you know, Manny and Floyd leave. And, you know, Miguel Cotto, because I put him in the same category as Manny and Floyd. I think there's a few guys. I think Adrian Broner can do it. I think Danny Garcia, Canelo Alvarez, a couple of good fighters who are hungry and, you know, want to be great. Now, will they do Floyd numbers? I don't think we'll ever see that, to be honest. I was shocked that Floyd can do it. I thought, you know, once Mike Tyson left, nobody was going to be able to do Mike Tyson numbers. But Floyd proved that, you know, wrong. So I think numbers-wise, I don't think anybody's going to generate as much money as Floyd Mayweather. But by, you know, getting boxing fans' attention and maybe entertaining future boxing fans, I think there's some young fighters who can still do that.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being with us here on Past and Present once again. Always a pleasure to have you. And real quick, before we wrap this session up, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, who wins? And does it go the distance?
Well, this is something that I've been thinking about for a long time. Who would win? From what I'm seeing, now, if you would have asked me this like 3 to 4 years ago, it would have been a tough It would have been that would have been a tough question, because Manny Pacquiao looked insane 3 to 4 years ago. Floyd still looked good, but Manny Pacquiao looked insane. Now, from what I've seen from their last three performances, I honestly think Floyd Mayweather will pick apart Manny Pacquiao. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that Manny will try to use his aggression, but Manny's lack of defense mm-hmm. and Floyd's incredible counter ability. I mean, Marquez caught Pacquiao, and Marquez isn't really, you know, Marquez is a good counter puncher, but he's not better than Floyd at counter punching. Sure. I honestly believe that the lack of Manny Pacquiao's defense and the quick hands of Floyd and his accuracy and precision, I just think he's just going to walk Manny down the whole time, especially because Floyd is way bigger than Manny. His reach is, I think Floyd will be able to just control the fight solely on reach. Floyd is a master of controlling people with reach, you know, taking away their best abilities. I think Floyd will definitely take away Manny's power from him. And I think that's what makes Floyd so great. He's so multidimensional that he can adjust to anything. And very few fighters can adjust to anything. I mean, Manny Pacquiao is a great offensive fighter, can throw punches like crazy, but his defense is suspect. I think Floyd will catch him with some good shots that will, you know, get him, you know. You've seen it when he fought Bradley the second time. Yeah. Bradley got him with some Bradley was throwing bombs and landed a couple. I don't know if Floyd will knock out Manny Pacquiao. Some people are saying that. I mean, Floyd hasn't had a decent knockout since Ricky Hatton. I really don't count the Victor Ortiz knockout because of how that happened, even though that was his last technical knockout. But I just feel like Floyd is going to prove a point. I think he's going to silence everyone. I think the day after when First Take comes on and, you know, Skip Bayless has to say something. I'm pretty sure Skip Bayless is going to have to just be quiet.
Okay.
And I hope he is just quiet. I hope he just says, you know, Floyd's the best and end it at that. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know how hungry Manny Pacquiao is. He's been impressive, but he hasn't really fought anybody. They call Floyd the cherry picker. They call Floyd handpicks his opponents. But the last three opponents he fought, Manny Pacquiao fought, were Chris Algieri, who no one knew, Tim Bradley, which, you know, the first fight I felt Pacquiao won. But, I mean, Tim Bradley's a good fighter. Mm-hmm. And Brandon Rios, who, you know, hasn't fought anybody big. Sure. And Floyd's fought, you know, his last fights were Maidana. And the fans wanted the rematch. I didn't think the rematch was needed. And he fought Canelo Alvarez, one of the youngest great fighters who will probably be, you know, the face of boxing after these two leave. Sure. I honestly believe that with Floyd's, you know, dedication to the sport, I honestly believe he's one of the, when I think people should really take a moment and just watch this guy fight. I know he doesn't have the best, you know, outside of the ring persona. I know he gets himself into trouble, but watching him box, that's boxing at its T. Mm. It's a science. And he has a good case for saying he's the best to ever do it, you know. He's okay with Ali being the greatest, but he says he's the best. So I'm really excited for this fight. I hope, you know, within the next couple weeks we have some set days. I know Canelo Alvarez set to fight Miguel Cotto on that day. And Oscar De La Hoya said, you know, I don't want Mayweather fighting on that date, but there's no bigger fight than Mayweather-Pacquiao. So Canelo's probably going to have to change his date.
All right.
If he wants to make any money, if he's smart, he's going to have to change his day, because this fight will definitely be the fight of the century.
So we're looking at May.
May 2nd, that's what they're saying. I think the MGM Grand, but honestly, if I'm thinking the bigger picture, I would say do it in Dallas, Cowboy Stadium. But I know Floyd gets injections in his hands that are only legal in Las Vegas. Because he hurts his hands a lot, so he numbs his hands before each fight. And that's why he usually fights in the MGM Grand, because it's legal in Las Vegas to do that. I don't know if it's legal in Dallas, but he gets those injections before every fight.
Interesting little fact. Didn't know that. Yeah. Well, all right, man. That's why we call you in here. Get the inside scoop. Get the real knowledge on fighting, a sport that I think gets overlooked entirely too much. So I appreciate you coming in here. Appreciate you spending time with us here today.
No problem. Anytime.
And I appreciate you all listening. This has been Past and Present. Stick around. We got more to come after this.
UrbanNightsRadio.com.
Hey, Urban Knights. My name is Lorena, and now you can take me everywhere you go. Yep. Urban Knights Radio is now part of iHeartRadio. Download the free app for your mobile device or tablet from the App Store and take Urban Knights Radio everywhere you go.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for us here on Past and Present. It is officially closing time. Another show down, another week off, and then I'll be back at you again next Tuesday with more information, more history, more facts, more stories, more of what you'd like to hear right here on the show. Real quick, before I get going, big shout out to all y'all back in Oregon showing me support. Go ahead and show me some more love by listening to this show. I appreciate everybody that's been doing it, especially my man Frank Smith, listening to this show all the way up in Seattle, kicking me tweets about what he likes to hear, all that good stuff. Frank, it was a pleasure serving with you in the military, my friend. Hope you're doing well on that military firefighting gig that you got going on up there in Seattle now. Good looking out. Everybody else, stay locked in right here on UrbanNightsRadio.com and UKR2. That's right, UKR2, where you can find all kinds of good sports shows such as mine, talk shows. We got a little music playing for you as well. And now that the basketball season has officially gotten well underway, be sure to go ahead and check out our live streaming of games. We got some good play-by-play announcers doing their thing too, you know. Show them some love, show the girls basketball team some love, show the men's basketball team some love, just show love all the way around, man. These are some hard-working student athletes that are getting the job done in the classroom and on the court or on the field each and every single day. These are the people that you want your youngsters growing up to be like. Believe me, it is a pleasure walking the halls with them every day here at the Academy of Art University. All right, that's going to do it for me here in the studio. Once again, I am Shane Tidrick. It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for tuning in. Can't wait to bring you more stories next week. But until then, keep it locked right here on UrbanNightsRadio.com, the sound of artists.